You're listening to Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Welcome to Sleep Stories for Equestrians. I'm your host, Ashley Winch. We're so happy you're here to relax and unwind. If you fall asleep and miss the story, we will recap it at the beginning of the next episode. We've also selected and edited these stories for ultimate relaxation, removing any stressful bits without affecting the story's integrity, so you can focus on drifting off to sleep. With that, let's settle down and prepare for our story. The gates are closed. The horses sleep. The day's work done. The chores complete. Now let us rest, our bodies and minds. Drift off to sleep and close your eyes. It's time for us to turn down for the night. Now let's breathe in, breathe out, and turn off the light. One more time, breathe out, breathe in. Now let us begin. On the last episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians, we got to meet White Heather and hear of her birth story. Let's begin the next chapter. The Dandy and the Elf meet at a bazaar. For some time after my first horse show, I heard nothing at all of the Dandy. After some months, I began to hear scraps of news concerning him from men about the place, and Eros and I felt sure from what we had heard that his circumstances were now very, very different from what they had been, and we both felt very sorry for him. But Chanticleer was horrid and said that the Dandy did not deserve to be happy when he had so willfully gotten himself banished from Duran Tower on account of his wicked temper. Eros and I stuck up for the Dandy and argued that it was not his temper, but real suffering which has caused the poor fellow to break away from his trainer. Only the day before the show, at which Lord Duran had set his heart on the Dandy and Zarina doing so well. It was shortly after this discussion with Chanticleer that Master took me to an open-air bazaar to show off my beauty and my powers. By this time, I was very well known, at any rate by name, to all the surrounding country folk. And the fact that I was to perform at the bazaar was sure to attract a certain number of people. It had been got up in aid of the Band of Mercy movement, and as you may imagine, Master was only too glad, and so was I, to further its cause to the best of our ability. I was dressed in all the splendor of my silver-studded Russian harness, which Master always allows me to wear on grand occasions. I am wearing the same harness in the picture, but of course you cannot see how really smart I look in it when I have it on, because the photographer was not clever enough to bring out the sparkle of my fine silver studs. I got through my performance with great credit, and Master was very pleased with me, and the guests cheered me on ever so loudly, and even wanted me to trot round the ring a second time, for they said I went like lightning. But Master bowed and shook his head, for he would not let me get too tired. The pleasure I had so evidently given filled me with excitement, and as Master was staying a little longer at the bazaar, he took me to a nice, shady spot and left me to calm down and await his departure. I was bubbling over with happiness and pride, and in imagination I listened again and again to the hearty claps of the people, and I thought about the admiration I had gained for myself as I trotted swiftly or stood perfectly still at a word from Master with my long tail either over or under the reins at my pleasure. There was no Eros or Chanticleer present to eclipse me in either speed or beauty, and as I stood patiently waiting for dear Master, I felt very pleased with myself and the world in general. There are several horses harnessed to beautiful carriages, and also numerous cabs in varying degrees of shabbiness standing near me, and it was fastened to one of the shabbiest of the latter that after much hard staring I recognized, as if by mesmeric power, my old friend the dandy. The poor creature was strangely altered, and had it not been for his peculiar and characteristic jerk of the head, I don't think I could possibly have known who it was standing so near to me. The dandy's once beautiful, sleek black coat was now rough and dull-looking. His eyes were blurred and heavy, and his whole bearing was that of a weary and dejected creature, having no joy in either life or in the living. Instead of his never-ceasing restlessness of bygone days, he now stood quite still, evidently too spiritless and downhearted to do anything but what he was forced to do. "Dandy," I called softly, but he took no notice. "Dandy, don't you know me? I am so glad to meet you again." Slowly, very slowly, my old friend turned his eyes on me, and the despairing hopelessness of his expression I'll never forget. His voice sounded weak and hollow as he answered, "Thank you, dear elf. You have always been a kind, sympathetic friend. You are clever indeed to recognize this shadow of my former self, for I feel, when I am able to feel at all, that I am kind of a changeling, and I am very much surprised when any of my old friends know me. Sometimes, indeed, I feel I scarcely know myself. My mind is often quite blank, and I forget things, and a numb kind of feeling comes over me when I try to remember. Nearly all the other horses on the cab stand don't like me, for they think I am quiet and distant, because I am too proud to be friendly and chatty with them. Yours, dear elf, is the first kind voice I have heard for many a long day." "Poor Dandy," I murmured. "Would it comfort you to tell your troubles to me?" "Perhaps it would, elf. Anyhow, I should like to tell you something of all I have gone through since I paired with Serena and was the pride for my Lady Durand. For then you will better understand why now I am so very different from the old dandy you used to know. I suppose you heard what occurred on that dreadfully hot day just before the horse show at which Serena and I were to be driven tandem for the first time?" "Yes, Dandy, I did, for I heard people talking about your naughtiness at the show. If you remember, it was my first show, and I was very disappointed when I knew that you and Serena would not be there. For of course both Eros and I had fully expected to see you." "Did you say people were calling me naughty, elf?" "Well, yes, Dandy, they were." "Naughty indeed. I just wonder how any horse could have acted differently, for the trainer took us out when the sun was at its very hottest, and there was a perfect plague of flies about. I was feeling nervous and excited about the show. And I suppose this and the extreme heat and the perpetual attacks of flies made me even more difficult to manage than usual. For it was a certain fact that the man who was driving us was not kind. I reared on my hind legs, showed the whites of my eyes, and bolted, dragging poor Zarina and the cart behind me. I soon managed to pitch the trainer over a hedge. But still, I tore madly on and only came to a standstill when a plucky policeman hanging on to my reins stopped me. As the policeman led me home, I trembled in every limb. We soon came across Zarina standing patiently by the smashed-up cart, but nowhere I could see was the cowardly man who was driving the cart. The brave policeman took hold of Zarina's broken rein and, placing himself between us, took us back to Duran Towers, and as our somewhat sorry party moved slowly along, he talked to both of us, very kindly and soothingly. "Whatever did Lord Duran say when you got home again?" "Well, Elf, of course he was very angry. But if you remember, he never quite approved of his wife's craze for fashion. And I heard him mutter, half in pity for me, but in fear of being disloyal to Lady Duran, that he expected the flies were greatly to blame for my running away. I think my mistress was really more angry than her husband, and it was she who advised him to sell me at once for anything he could get for me. And then, to my horror, I heard my former master say to the head groom that he could try to find a purchaser for me. Fancy, Elf, being disposed of in that undignified way, just left to a groom to get what he could for me, and not even going to Tattersall's to be properly bid for, like all the other horses who had been sold from the towers. "Had you damaged yourself, Dandy?" I asked. "Alas, Elf, yes. I had seriously hurt both knees of my forelegs, and although they very soon got well again, I shall always have these ugly scars which you can see on each. And so, I suppose Lord Duran thought I wasn't worth bothering about, as my value was greatly lessened." The groom soon heard of a man who was glad to buy me cheap, and about 3 weeks after my bolt, I left the towers early one morning and was taken to a little country railway station about a mile away. I heard the screech of an engine and saw a train come tearing in, to which was fastened a horse box. The train stopped, and some men came towards me to help the lad who had brought me to the station to get me into the horse box. I felt very miserable and frightened, and in my terror I kicked and reared so wildly that a sack had to be put over my head before they could persuade me to enter the carriage, which had evidently been annexed to the train for me and me alone. Then I had a long, long journey by rail and only reached my destination quite late in the evening. I must confess that the man who came to the station to meet me was very kind, and my first impressions of the new surroundings were not unfavorable. The farmer, who had bought me as a birthday present for his wife, was rather proud of my appearance, and he didn't mind the damaged knees, as he has gotten me cheap. I was given a fairly comfortable stall in a small stable, very different from my palatial loose box at Duran Towers, but still not bad. Then the man who had fetched me from the station gave me a rubdown and a good supper, and considering my changed circumstances, I passed a fairly good night. The next morning, I was harnessed to a gaily painted gig, which was supposed to be smart, but which I thought vulgar, and driven round to the front door of the farmhouse. Presently, the farmer and his wife came out, and with much pomp and ceremony, I and the gig were presented to the lady. "My Fletcher," she said, "you have done me well this time." "I can afford it, Maria. The whole thing there cost me a pretty penny." I snorted, for I knew he had bought me for a mere song. Mrs. Gibson, the name of my new mistress, insisted on going for a drive at once, and although her husband said that the man must go with her in case I played up, she drove me herself. She was a shocking driver and pulled and jagged my mouth. She met lots of friends on the road we took, and we made many stops for me to be admired. "That surely was nice for you, Dandy," I interrupted. "Don't be too hasty in drawing conclusions, Elf, but hear what I have to say." We drove for nearly 3 hours, and we were almost home again when we met a lady coming towards us in a dog cart, and she was also driving herself. She pulled up and Mrs. Gibson stopped also. They exchanged a few pleasantries, and then the lady said to my mistress, "I see you've got a new horse, Mrs. Gibson." "Yes, Miss Franks. Fletcher gave him to me only this morning for a birthday gift." "What do you think of him?" "He looks a fine fellow, but don't you think his tail is just a bit too long for the present-day fashion?" The words made me tremble all over, Elf. "I should think so, you poor, poor dandy." I listened eagerly for Mrs. Gibson's reply, which was rather reassuring, for she said, "I think you must be mistaken, Miss Franks, for Fletcher told me that Dandy came from a very swell place, some towers or other, where they keep heaps of horses, real gentry," Fletcher said. "And the people are from whom he bought my present." Miss Franks would not be convinced about the length of my tail, and at last grew angry with Mrs. Gibson. So bidding her good morning, she drove on, and we went home. Mr. Gibson came out to meet his wife, and at once asked her if she was satisfied with me. "The dandy's all right," she answered, "but Miss Franks says his tail is not a fashionable length, that it ought only be a stump." "His tail is short enough, in all conscience," answered Mr. Gibson. "It's a cruel deed to the poor beast." Thank you for joining me on tonight's episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians. Now, relax and let this music carry you off to dreamland.
Thank you.